Hello, I'm Fern Cotton, and this is Happy Place, the show that encourages you to lay your soul bare. Today, I'm meeting Matt Willis.
Everything about me is some way linked to addiction, in one way or another. Everything that I do, I find myself tracing it back to some kind of drink or drug problem or a new addiction which I picked up.
Matt has had an unbelievably varied career, shooting to fame in the early noughties as the bassist in Busted, before going on to make solo music, perform in musical theatre, act on TV, be crowned king of the I'm a Celebrity jungle, and now hosts a podcast called On the Mend, where he chats to people about their addictions. We've obviously had his gorgeous wife Emma on the podcast before. God, I love Emma. But this was the first time I got to sit down with Matt for a proper deep chat at our Happy Place Festival in Tatton Park. We talked about loads of stuff, the moment he realised drugs and alcohol were no longer serving him, learning to take responsibility for his actions and reactions, and the shame that can engulf you if you relapse.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a beautiful chat. Let's do it. Here's the show.
I just sort of followed you
in.
What a beautiful fairy tale moment.
Hi, mate.
Oh, Matt.
Yeah, I released them backstage when I came on.
Yeah. Oh, Matt, welcome.
Hi.
This is our lovely audience.
Hello, everyone. Hi. You had a good weekend?
Yeah.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's a lovely, lovely atmosphere. You've obviously been to so many festivals over the years. This is a bit different.
And I felt a bit more nervous walking out to this stage than normal. Walking out to a festival somewhere
without an instrument.
Yeah, exactly.
No instrument to hide behind.
Laid bare. Yeah.
Well, it's just going to be a lovely chat with these beautiful people here. It's all good vibes, and there's so many things that I want to talk to you about because we've known each other for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I do believe I was the first person to interview you.
You were our first television interview. Yeah, I remember it well because it was what was it on
CBBC?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was about 18, 19, I think. And we just were about to release What I Got a Score For, I think. And we came on and we were like, oh my God, Fern's interviewing us. Oh. And it was a real kind of moment. We were like, wow, we're in TV world. How weird.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. Back in the day, you had so many TV shows that you could go on when you were promoting music. So you were literally thrown in to this wild scene of going on TV shows where millions of people were watching. You know, kids' TV shows on the weekends, because there was only four channels, everyone was watching, so you were really thrust into this crazy world. Obviously, you'd been at drama school, was it performing arts school beforehand?
Yeah.
But it's a huge transition to go from the safety of that into that absolute madness. How did you cope at such a young age with that?
I think at the beginning, if I'm honest, it was kind of all, I couldn't really believe it was happening. You know, when I think about the beginning of Busted, like, I remember doing our first video shoot, and like we wrote those songs on acoustic guitars in James's bedroom as kind of like, really, because we couldn't get in any other band. We tried and auditioned for many bands and couldn't get in. And so me and James were kind of the outcasts and we just started our own little thing. And so we kind of wrote these songs, not really expecting what to do with them. We were hoping to kind of play some gigs in Southend, or kind of there was one club in Southend that we really wanted to play in. And before we know it, we got signed. It was all kind of going on. And we turned up to the video shoot and there was about 100 people there and like cameras and lights, and they rented this old like disused school. I was like, wow, this is so much more than I thought it was going to be, you know. And I think from then on, I never really ever really got a moment to take it in, you know. It kind of always kind of it was always about the next thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as you've got something out, it's always about, well, don't count your chickens because this is going to happen and this is going to happen. Everything can go wrong at any moment. And it was always on my mind, I think. It was kind of like, well, this is going to end soon. So kind of like, just enjoy it as much as possible. But I don't think I ever really did. I think I was always kind of very much kind of waiting for it to self-destruct.
Mm. Which
it eventually did. But, you know, it was kind of, it was much more kind of mesmerizing than enjoyable at times.
So when Busted dissipated, did you then have that moment of what the hell has just happened over the last however many years? Did you then start to process everything you'd been through?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, in not very healthy ways, really. But it was kind of hit me. I think with Busted, I kind of I was always very nervous, very uncomfortable, very kind of self-conscious person. And I kind of came up with this this character within Busted who I played, who was kind of this kind of like Matt from Busted guy, you know, and like in every photo you'd see, I was kind of doing a funny face or something because I felt uncomfortable. I didn't really know what to do or kind of who to be. So I kind of created this kind of guy who was Matt from Busted. And then when Busted was removed, I was like, right, well, who the hell am I? You know, and that really hit me, you know, and I don't think I really had an answer for a very long time.
And what ways... Obviously, you've talked about this very openly. You're using destructive ways and alcohol at times, I'm guessing, to numb that feeling. But how did you start to work out, who am I? What do I like? How do I want to present myself to the world? What was that process?
I think alcohol and drugs really served a fantastic purpose for me. The end of it was horrible. But at the time, when I first started to use those things, they did for me what I couldn't do for myself. They kind of gave me a way to be... the life and soul of the party, the kind of person that I think people wanted me to be and liked me being around, you know, and suddenly people wanted me to be at the party and wanted me to come to their thing or their show and I was amazed by that. And so it kind of really, and I felt relaxed and calm and kind of like ready to kind of be in those environments when without those things, I was terrified and filled with self-hatred and dread and all these kind of emotions. And so, but I had a drink or I had some drugs of many kinds and they kind of gave me something, this kind of, they called it Dutch courage and all these kind of things, but they really did serve a purpose for me until they didn't, you know, and suddenly I was the one that people didn't want at their party or I'd stayed a bit too long at the party, you know, and that kind of, that didn't really hit me for many years, I think. When I think back to those moments, people had kind of pulled me aside at multiple times and kind of, you know, big kind of people who I thought very much of kind of pulled me aside at many times and go, Matt, I think you have a bit of a problem here. But I'd never really, I always kind of batted it off. You know, I was always like, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm good. This is great. It's kind of the lifestyle I want to lead. And it was serving me until suddenly I was running out of those people, you know, those kind of influential forces, which I think... You only have so many get-out-of-jail-free cards, I think, and I was kind of very close to using them all up. You know, I tried lots of different things to kind of stop and kind of and step away from these kind of lives, and I don't think many of them really worked until I had a kid. And when I had Isabel, it was a real moment of looking at this baby and kind of going, "Wow, I'm going to be a terrible father," you know. And it really hit me, and it still does, you know, because that moment of, you know, who you are, you know, you can't hide from it anymore, and you can't hide from it in front of this little thing, you know, because whatever you do, you're going to repeat the patterns of the past, you're going to repeat what you've been through, you're going to redo that circle, you know, and it all kind of hit me at once, and I was like, right, I'm not willing to be that, you know, so I'm going to try and ask for help, you know, and I did ask for help from many different people, and I was given it freely, and it was a beautiful thing, and it kind of it took a while. I kind of fell off the wagon many, many times, you know, but I always knew that I just had to get back on, you know, and I was allowed to, you know, I was allowed to make mistakes, and they happen, and they're, you know, I think we can get into a lot of kind of shame cycles with these kind of things, you know. And I think relapse is one of those things where sometimes you're even scared to say you've done it because you're scared of letting people down, or the bullshit you tell yourself is laid bare in front of you. Yep. And I think that can cause lots of shame. But actually, the first thing you have to do is admit it and talk about it. And then you can really kind of address what that was, why that happened, what was going on in your life that kind of steered you to that moment, and find some kind of solution.
I think talking about those feelings, that's the only way you can get rid of shame.
Yeah.
Shame breeds from secrecy, doesn't it? It gets bigger and more magnified the more you keep it private. And it's just, that's a terrible road to go down. So I think as hard as it is to reach out to ask for help or to talk to someone about these things.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't had problems with alcohol and drinks myself, but I had exactly the same when I was recovering from bulimia. And if I relapsed there, I'd feel mortified, ashamed. It was a secret again, didn't want to tell anyone.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do, that relief, like, it alleviates so much stress being able to say those words out loud.
Yeah.
And also know that so many people have been through these things and want you to get better, and they know that that's also going to in turn help them to get better.
Yeah.
And like you've just said, when you did reach out, the help was there.
Yeah.
We don't always imagine that's going to be the case. And it's a wonderfully surprising thing to go, people want to help.
Yeah, completely. You know, a friend of mine's here today, I've caught up with him, and I remember going out for dinner with two of my friends. I was about kind of 3 or 4 months clean, and we were out to dinner, and I was like, you guys can have a drink, you know, like, don't feel that you can't, I'm fine with it. They were like, it's a Tuesday night, Matt. You know, I'm not, I don't really want to. And I was like, what? They were like, wait, what do you mean? You don't drink all the time. They were like, no, you fucking forced us to. You know, I was like, oh, right, okay. Oh, you're normal. How's that?
Tell me about normal.
Yeah, exactly. How do I do that? You know, so it was, I think you're right. I think, you know, there's so much to do with addiction, which is so internal, you know, and so much is kept inside, and those secrets just build up and build up and build up until they can't be held in anymore, you know, and or they just destroy you, you know. And I think that the thing with being open and talking about these things and kind of getting rid of that shame about it, because lots of people struggle with everything, right? Lots of people struggle with so many things. Like, life is really fucking hard.
Really hard, yeah.
You know, and that's not going to change, you know. Like, so finding ways to deal with that aren't completely self-destructive and turn your life into a shambles has got to be better. And I think that's about talking about it and opening up and kind of going, this is okay. This happens to everyone, you know, at different times, in different things. It can manifest in so many different ways. You know, that's what I'm finding out with addiction, is that I no longer drink or take drugs, but I do so many things addictively, you know, and they can manifest in so many weird ways, you know, sometimes wonderful, sometimes fucking terrible, you know, and I really have to check them and go, oh, what's this? What am I using that for? Mm. What's that serving? What am I trying to kind of use that to change the way I feel, you know?
So do you have a bit of an internal gauge that goes, oh, that's tipped into something extreme?
Sometimes it's my wife. Who can very knowingly tell me, Matt, what's that? You know, and you know, I think, but that's the thing. I think it's about the more you kind of do in this kind of stuff, in kind of addiction based therapy, especially, is about kind of owning who you are and kind of like. And I think that's the problem, because for so long I was so ashamed and kind of scared about telling anybody what my life was like, or what I was going through, or what had kind of happened to me, and kind of and scared to talk about drink and drugs, especially because I was scared that if I relapsed, I'd be like, you know, you're full of shit, you know. When actually, you know, it's an ongoing thing. It's an ongoing thing. It's every day, you know. And like, and in certain places I've been, I hear people say, I'm a very grateful recovered addict or whatever, and I'm like, I'm not recovered. You know, how do I do that?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the thing about recovery is it's an ongoing process. It's about kind of checking in with yourself all the time, kind of finding moments where you can go, okay, what am I doing right now? What do I want? And what am I doing that's stopping me from doing that? And sometimes I do that quite often at the moment. Like, I've got a little journal and I sit down and I go, right, what are my goals? What are my aspirations? What do I want from certain things? And what's the one thing I'm doing that's holding me back? And that's a really hard question to ask, because the answer is awful. most of the time. You know,
I know it's probably different for everyone, but would it normally relate to self-loathing or a self-esteem issue that's holding you back from doing something?
Yes, very, very often that is the thing. Mm. You know, I don't do certain things because I'm scared that I won't be able to.
Yeah.
And if I put it out there, then I won't be able to fulfill, and that will hurt me. You know, rather than it's not necessarily about letting other people down, then it's about me not being able to do what I want to do, and that's really hard, you know,
yeah.
to kind of own up to. And but I think that's the thing. Like, the more life goes on, I kind of realize I don't really know what I'm doing. You know,
exactly. I don't have a clue.
Exactly, but that's okay.
Yeah,
right?
It's great. Like,
it's okay to know that.
Yeah.
Go, actually, I don't have a fucking clue what I'm doing or what I'm doing, but I'm gonna have a go.
I think it's better because when you think you know, you get really rigidly stuck in one frame of mind. This is the route I'm going on, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly didn't plan to do any of this Happy Place stuff. It was all a massive accident because I was in a low place, and I'm glad that I felt like I really didn't know what the hell I was doing because I wouldn't have been open otherwise to go down other paths. So I think it's the best place of acceptance to land on. I haven't got a clue, and I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I don't know a thing.
Yeah,
I know nothing. I'm willing to learn.
Exactly. I think that's what's so great. Right?
Yeah.
Is that as soon as you kind of say that, you can kind of go, oh, okay. Well, then I need to make some kind of plan.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever that is. And sometimes your plan's shit, right? And I've made lots of shit plans. But by following through with those shit plans, you know, even if it's a shit plan, if you stick to it, something happens.
Yeah.
And then there's a shit outcome. There's
a shit outcome.
But you can learn from that shit outcome and go, oh, right, okay, my plan was shit. Right, how do I make a better plan?
Exactly.
Okay, or a slightly less shit plan, you know? And like, then it's like, right, okay, cool, we'll do this for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, and I think that's with a lot of things. Like, if you stick to something, something will happen.
Mm.
It might not be what you expected, but something will happen.
It's better than doing nothing.
Exactly.
It's better than doing nothing. I'm very interested in, and I'm sure this again is a daily thing, but when you first decide to stop using drugs and alcohol to either numb, distract, whatever the reason is you're doing it, you obviously are met with a lot. You're met with your past and having to look at it and deal with it. You're met with things that you've already touched on, self-loathing, feeling uncomfortable in certain scenarios, certainly social scenarios.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of big moment of exposure. It's huge and it's very terrifying, and I'm sure that you felt extremely vulnerable in those moments. But how do you now meet yourself, look at your past, look at your own moments of self-loathing, look at your discomfort in certain situations, and how do you move through them?
The first time I went to a rehab center, they said there was lots of stuff around, lots of like messaging around, and I hated all of it, and I was really kind of against it, and I didn't take any of it in, and I was literally there so that people would get off my back, right? And I was like, go to rehab because that's the thing you do, and you can come out, you can be good for a couple of weeks, and you can kind of slip back into your life, you know. And then I ended up back there. And then I ended up back there again. And on the fourth time I was there, I looked around and things started to make sense to me. And I read these things and I was like, all right, someone's got something which I want. You know, what is that? What is that thing that I don't have that I think that I maybe am drawn to by these people who are talking to me or whatever it is? And I think, you know, for so long, all I wanted to do was stop taking drugs. That was my number one goal. And I think that's a really good goal if you're a drug addict. You know, it's kind of go, right, okay.
That's a good plan.
It's a good plan, right? That's not a shit plan. That's a good plan. You know, and so that was my number one goal, right? And then I kind of did that. And I was like, right, okay, I no longer take drugs on a daily basis. I no longer drink when I wake up. These are good things, right? So then, oh no, now I'm left with me, like you said. And I'm like, what do I do about that? Oh, well, maybe I need to address why I feel this way and why I react this way to certain situations. Why, for me, a big one is when I feel rejected in any slight little way, why do I react so terribly to that? You know, and what is the root cause of that? The words on the wall were like prayer and meditation. And I kind of dismissed that. I was like, I don't believe in religion. I don't believe in all that stuff. You know, like meditation, that's for other people. And slowly but surely, those things started to call to me. You know, and that has been the number one biggest thing that that has changed my reaction to situations is a little moment to myself to breathe, to kind of steady myself, to kind of find some kind of gap between emotional response, reaction, you know, and that little breath is all it takes.
Yeah. Right?
And that's so powerful, but it took me so long to find that.
Yeah.
You know, but when you actually can, and all it took was me committing to it, you know, which is so hard to do because you do it for a couple of days, you're like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, can't be bothered.
You know, can't be bothered, it's so hard, it's like, my brain's too active.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay. You know, that's okay, your brain is active, that's his fucking job.
Yeah, you're alive.
Exactly, you're alive, like, you know, yeah. that's a good thing. You know, but like, those kind of things have been really, really important to me. And I think, and more, like that, like I sometimes take 4 or 5 breaks a day now, you know, and like, and I breathe and I do different things and I've got this many different routines that I follow that just allow me to have that. Oh, hello, mate.
Oh my God, there's a wasp literally on your face. Hello. Go away.
Hello. He's telling me to stop talking.
No, yeah. Please keep talking.
Telling me to take a breath.
Well, I saw you on Instagram the other day saying this, that you'd had a stressful moment trying to use some software, and normally your reaction might be, oh, sod this, I'm over it. But actually, you took yourself, you did the breathing exercises, you're in a different mindset.
Completely, you know, and I think that's the thing, because, you know, a bad morning can lead to a bad day, and a bad day can lead to a bad week, and a bad week can lead to all sorts of horrible shit. You know, so having that kind of moment to go, okay, cool, this is something that you're dealing with. This is not necessarily other people's problems. This is yours. You know, and having that ownership and actually going, this isn't really what's happened to you. This is the way you're reacting to it, which is, it's responsibility at the end of the
day. Yeah, it's humbling though, isn't it? Because so you have to go, oh God, like I even end up sort of boring myself in those moments. Like, am I doing that again? Am I really reacting like this again? Like I'm 12, like it's just so ridiculous. But I think it is, the pause is the most important thing to have that self-awareness, to look at, oh, like for you, I think it's probably the same for me, one of my root fears is rejection, is people not liking me, not wanting me around, and how I cope with that, have my own emotional independence in those moments. It's really hard, but I think if you've got something that works for you, and yours is now these breathing techniques or a meditation, it can be anything. I think it could be a hobby or whatever it is, but if you've got that moment to pause, you take control of your own life.
Completely. Mm. And I think that's exactly it. And I think it's about, you know, for me, I've always been really scared of responsibility. You know, I've hated that because I didn't feel very responsible, you know, and I was always like worried about letting people down. When actually, when you step up and you take responsibility, you know, and that's sometimes about taking responsibility for the way you act. You know, for me, I'm speaking to myself. I'm not preaching. I'm speaking to myself when I'm speaking out loud here. Matt, don't react that way. You know, but for me, it's about I am responsible for what I say and I do. You know, to a certain degree. You know, drinking drugs was a point in my life where I had no control over that, and that was really difficult to stop and difficult to step away from. But now, without that, I actually do have complete control over my thoughts and my reactions and my responsibilities in life, and I take them quite seriously, a bit too seriously sometimes, you know. But those moments of kind of going, okay, cool, you're reacting badly to this. What's that coming from, you know? And kind of and therapy's been a big thing for me, kind of like owning. I mean, there's some things which I still haven't addressed. You know, I'm kind of a bit scared too at times, you know, because I'm like, things are going pretty well.
Yeah.
Don't open Pandora's box.
Yeah.
You know, which is a worrying thing, you know, but I'm like, well, things are going pretty well. What if I opened Pandora's box? How well would they go?
Yeah.
You know, because I've only seen benefits from that. I've not seen any negatives. It's been hard, and it's sometimes really hard to go through, but only positives have happened from that.
I think that's a really important point to make, because I was doing a talk in another little tent earlier, and we were having a similar discussion about wanting to get to the place where you're like, oh, I'm done, I'm all fixed. Cool, let's just then enjoy the rest of life. Whereas I think my learning over the last, I don't know, 5 years of diving quite deeply into all this stuff is, this is every day forever.
Yeah.
No one really wants to hear that or say that out loud, but it sort of is.
Absolutely,
this is every day forever. Yeah. And there'll be really good moments, like you say, where you work through something and it's hard, but then something beautiful comes out of it.
Yeah.
Or there'll be moments that feel like a bit of a, you know, a trudge through something, but you will end up peeling back more layers and understanding yourself better. And we're certainly not looking to fix ourselves to be this perfect human, has no flaws. Everything just runs smoothly, which is a completely unrealistic goal. I think makes most of us give up before we've even started. Like, oh, what's the point? I could never sort this out. But equally, like yesterday, we were talking to Dr. Chatterjee, who said, very much linked to what you're saying, we often go, oh, this is just how I am. Like, I am just, and you'll apply a trait to yourself, I am just overly reactive or angry or super sensitive. But you've just proved, by telling your story, you can change. You can change how you react to things, what your emotional response to outside situations are. And that is liberating, but there has to be the hard work bit. It's hard work.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, I think it's all, it's a daily reprise.
Yeah.
You know, meditation.
Every day.
It's every day, you know, because, and without it, and when I don't do it for a day, I miss it. You know, when I don't do it for 2 days, I have to really have a check on myself, you know, because, you know, and so I try to do that every day. You know, I think when I first came into recovery, I was like, well, I have to go to these things all the time. You know, I have to do this stuff every day. I was like, can't you just, you know, give me something, fix me, you know, which I really wanted.
Yeah.
I really wanted to kind of like just take something and everything be okay.
Yeah.
I tried that a lot. Didn't work. Just made things worse. But kind of doing these things every day, and I can still be a dick, you know, like a lot, you know, and, you know, like a lot. But like I can kind of notice those and kind of go, okay, right.
You're a self-aware dick.
I'm a self-aware dickhead. You know, so
that's the best.
Which
kind.
Is better than just being a dickhead.
Yeah,
you know?
Much better.
So, yeah,
it's
much
way better,
right?
No,
yeah.
But this is all about. I can be a right bitch sometimes, or I can get very angry. I can be horrible. Like, let's not all pretend anyone stood on this stage today. We're here to tell everybody what to do, so it's all perfect. Yeah. No, we haven't got a clue. We've already specified that earlier. We're merely here to be honest, and that's why I really appreciate everything you're saying today, because it isn't about fixing ourselves to become the perfect person where there are no flaws, hurdles in life, etc. It's looking for shared tools and techniques so we can all cope a little better.
Yeah.
I do think learning those tools is part of it, but discipline is a huge part of it. And discipline isn't the sort of sexiest word, is it? It's like everyone's like, oh, not discipline. I don't want to do discipline. Can't it just be like once a year or like you've just said this one thing and I'm fixed?
Yeah.
But it's this is everyday stuff. And discipline is a huge part of that.
Yeah. And even those things that are the one thing, you know, like you do one thing and you're like, oh, that's changed me. But all it's done is open up other opportunities to find things. Like I said, all I wanted to do was stop taking drugs and I thought I'd be okay. You know, but I stopped taking drugs and I was like, fuck, what do I do now?
There's more.
You know, my God, I've got to look at this. I've got to look at this. I've got to look at my health. I've got to look at relationships that I have that I've maybe destroyed or really hurt from my past actions. How do I fix those? How do I show the people that I'm going to be available for them?
Well, I guess doing that also, I'm imagining this has been an important part of it. Mm. Looking at, say we're talking about relationship dynamics, looking at that situation with compassion for yourself, because you've got that self-awareness and you can go, oh, I know I messed up that friendship or whatever it was, or I reacted because I was trying to cope or I was defending myself from rejection or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I think the only way we can do that, rather than beating ourselves up, I'm such an idiot for ruining that relationship or whatever it is to apply self-compassion when we're looking at moments where we've all made mistakes or where things haven't turned out as we would have hoped. I think we have to have self-compassion to do that well. Has that come easily?
It doesn't come as easily to me. I can be quite hard on myself quite a lot. Do you know what I've noticed over the last 2 years? I used to think I was quite good at being chill. I'm terrible at being chill. Like, I am terrible. I can't sit still. I can't watch TV. I can't really do any of the stuff that kind of normal people do. Normal people, you know, but people do, right?
Yeah.
I'm just not very good at that. And I thought, oh, I have to be good at that. I have to be good at normal shit. But I'm not. And I'm like, actually, that's okay because I'm good at other shit. You know, so I'm like, I'm going to really focus on the other stuff. And that kind of stuff, I don't think I'll ever be good at, you know, like, which is, I had a bit of a, just before lockdown, I kind of got diagnosed with adult ADHD. And I kind of, it was a really hard moment for me because I didn't believe in it. I thought that was just another word for lazy, you know, for me. You know, and I know that's wrong, and I'm sorry for saying that out loud, but that's...
No, it's a very honest approach to it.
That's what I thought. I was like, this is just another word that they call lazy people, and I'm just a lazy person. That's what they're saying. So getting that diagnosis and kind of like finding out a bit more about that, and the person who diagnosed me saying I was the easiest diagnosis he'd ever made in his life.
Wow.
You know, was like, all right, okay.
I maybe need
to look at that, right? But suddenly going through this kind of mourning period, which was really strange, kind of going, oh my God, if I'd known this when I was a kid, like, things could be different. I would have paid attention at school, would have been such a fucking dropout, would have done this. Ooh, and feeling all this kind of like remorse and more self-hatred for it. Actually, it became liberating. And I was like, all right, okay, what do I do about this? And how do I address this? And those things that I was saying, these things that I can't chill or I can't sit still or I can't stay on something I don't like very much, you know, that's okay because I'm never going to be good at that, which is like, that's actually quite freeing.
Yeah, you know yourself.
I know myself.
I think it's so interesting, like looking at, you know, some people will love being diagnosed with a label and some people will not react well to that. And I think there's no wrong or right to it.
Yeah.
But it can be liberating in the sense that you go, oh, I understand myself. I know why I do this or this. There's a root cause to this and understanding your own childhood. And I think there's so much more I would like to explore within sort of looking at ADHD and adult diagnosis, because so many people I know in the last 12 months, probably due to having, you know, a bit of time to think about it over the pandemic, have been diagnosed recently, and it has been liberating to have the resources to understand more about it, to understand yourself, and to know the situations to put yourself in, the ones to completely avoid. I think it's freeing.
It is really freeing, and it also opens a whole new kind of kettle of fish for me, because it was like, right, well, I'm an addict and I can't really go near any medication. So what do I do about this? You know, what do I find ways to kind of deal with this? You know, it was kind of a really kind of like, it was a moment of real torment for me in a way to kind of go, right, well, I need to get this right. I need to get fucking ADHD right. Like, do I? You know, no, I don't need to get it right. You know, I'm like, it's all right. It's okay. You know, like, that's me and that's fine. You know, but actually now the one thing that's changed my life because of that is a fucking list.
Yeah.
Simple as a list.
I love a list.
My wife loves a list.
Look at my Virgo notepad.
I love it. But like having a list and making it achievable and easy to do, and that's all I have to do today is do that.
It makes me feel like excited. Like I've sketched such. I have different color pens. This is my purple pen for when I highlight certain sections of my interviews. Lists for me and on paper is absolutely the key.
Absolutely on paper, not on my phone.
No.
I can't do it on my phone.
Paper.
On paper every day.
Oh, it's heaven.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Going back to addiction, there's something that I'm keen to understand, and that is, we in the modern world celebrate lots of things in quite a warped way, which hopefully we're addressing this weekend for myself alongside lots of other people. We get addicted to things en masse that seemingly are celebrated, like working.
Yeah.
Or even it could be something like exercise, and we're going, oh, it's amazing, you do loads of exercise, you're amazing, you work relentlessly. And it's like, is that a good thing? How do you know whether you've tipped into addiction when it's something that is quite seemingly positive or celebrated, like work or exercise, and how might you try and address the balance?
That's a problem for me.
Right.
I don't quite have that answer. I don't have the balance yet. Like, exercise was a big thing for me. Like, when I found it, because I didn't have that in my life, and then I found it and I became completely and utterly addicted to it. And it was great because everything about it was positive. And then it became a problem where if I didn't, or something got in the way of it, it triggered me and I became angry or upset, and it was and then I was trying to make up for things, or, you know, food was a problem for me and I'd try and outwork it from exercise, all these kind of things. And that still is a bit of an issue for me sometimes. But I have a few things where One, is it getting in the way of my relationships? Which is a big thing for me, because a lot of things can get in the way of my relationships with the people I love. Is work becoming so much that it's getting in the way of my relationship? Or does that need to happen right now so that I can have this period of time where I can be present, as long as that period of time happens? And certain things, like we block out time now, like we'll block out time where me and Emma will have, right, we've got 3 weeks and we're not booking any work there. Whatever happens will be a no work zone, which I think is really important, you know, and that can be problematic because suddenly something really amazing will come up every fucking time.
Yeah. You know? The best job ever.
Like, no, do you know what? This is really important. And I've blocked it out. And that's why I've been deranged asshole for the last 3 months to get to this point where I can go, okay, this is time, you know? So I think those are really important. But for me, looking at it and going, why am I doing this? What is this serving me? You know, why am I working out like this? Why am I become fixated on diet and nutrition, which can be a real problem for me? Why am I doing this? What is it fixing that I need fixing? You know, rather than, is it fixing that? Or is it fixing something else that I haven't dealt with? You know?
And do you just need to actually, I mean, I'm talking about myself here, have acceptance of that thing rather than fixing it? Like, yeah, I can't do this, or I'm not good at that, or that happened in the past is usually a thing for me and I can't change that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, find the peace in it somewhere. Except, and it's hard.
Things I cannot change. Yeah. Which is a big thing.
Big thing.
To fucking change everything.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know. Yeah, I really struggle with that sometimes. I really try to fix everything when actually, you know, knowing that that happened and that was then. Also, for me, I have a lot of things that happened to me when I was a kid, and I would go around in my head for a long time and ruminate on them until I realized that I'm not that kid anymore. You know, I'm not that. Like, that happened to that guy, you know, not to this guy. How would this guy deal with that? You know, and you probably have a lot of empathy and compassion and
absolutely
to that little guy, you know, like and kind of looking back at it and going, okay, actually, well, that's, I'm no longer that. I can set that free because it's no longer me,
you know. That's definitely one of the most powerful therapies that I've done, or practices within therapy, where you go back to, and we'll probably all have a specific age of ourselves that either you went through something and you were the victim of something, or you reacted badly to something, or you did something that you massively regret. I've definitely got both of those things. And rather than rejecting, I used to reject my old, I was embarrassed of my old self.
Absolutely.
I was mortified about who I was, what I looked like. I wanted to reject all of it. And the best thing any of us can do is go back and like gather that younger version of ourselves up and like give them a hug. And go, come here. Like, that for me was profound. I still find it very hard to even imagine doing that.
I did a therapy, which was that exact thing, and it was so heavy.
Heavy.
Like the heaviest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
To the point where there was one that I knew that I could go to if I wanted to, and I haven't ever gone there because I had such a hard time dealing with the second session that I was too scared to go there again. But it was really eye-opening for me to kind of go, okay, that was that little kid, that was that scared, you know, fragile person, and I'm not that anymore. You know, I'm me, and I would deal with that differently, and I would think differently of the actions that I took.
Yeah.
And I do think differently of the actions I took because I was not equipped for that situation, and that was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, and anybody else who was me would deal with that situation exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's exactly, it's about having compassion and kind of like, and looking at things a bit differently, you know, which is hard, but beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful. And I loved recently that you had a 7-day digital detox that turned into 8 months. That was a great moment.
That's a typical addict behavior.
Like, where's Matt?
Yeah.
That's literally gone. And then you pop back up. Hey, guys.
Yeah.
That was 8 months. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, that must have been a brilliant time of reflection. And I'm imagining
it was amazing. Yeah, it was incredible. Like Dr. Rangan Chatterjee did it.
Yeah.
He did a 7-day and he did it for 30 days. And after 7 days, I did it for 7 days. And I thought, you know, because what was happening, I was in a musical, and I have this routine that I did to kind of get myself ready for the next scene. And there was a lot of time when I was off stage and I'd be in my dressing room and I'd be preparing myself to get back on stage. And slowly but surely, that became walking off stage, picking up my phone and scrolling and hearing my cue, putting my phone down and walking on stage and doing it. And I was like, this isn't what I'm here to do. I've taken this job to get better and I'm not getting better. I'm just wasting my time. And it was a real kind of like, what am I doing? You know, so I was like, right, okay, I'll do 7 days. Not wanting to say out loud that I wanted to do 30 days because I didn't want to do 7 days and come back after 12 and go, sorry. You know? but I thought, right, okay, I'm going to say I'm doing 7 days with every intention of doing 30. Then it got to a month and I was like, well, life is better. Like, miraculously, like, I don't miss it. I don't miss anything about it. And my relationship with that thing was bad. You know, I must say bad. It was not good for me.
Yeah.
You know, it was very much about comparison. You know, very much about comparing, looking at that, buying shit I didn't need, you know, all the fucking time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, right, okay, this is not good for me. This is not serving me. So I put it down, and then I kind of tried to really look at what I wanted from that. You know, what is this thing that we've discovered that we now have in our lives that is so massive to humanity, apparently? Like, what is this thing? What is the reason for it? And it made me ask really interesting questions about what I wanted from that. And what do I want from that? Well, you have to have it for work, Matt. Do I? Because I haven't had it for work for 8 months and everything's been fine. Mm. You know, what do I want this to be? And I'm like, right, okay, everything about me is some way linked to addiction in one way or another. Everything that I do, I find myself tracing it back to some kind of drink or drug problem or a new addiction which I picked up. And I was like, right, okay, well, I'm going to use that for that. And I'm just going to kind of use this as a kind of purpose to kind of help me in a way that I'm going to check who I follow. I'm not going to do this thing.
Yeah.
I'm only going to post stuff which I think is going to help someone or help me or remind me of something that I need to be checking out. You know, it was really, it was a really great experience.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? We can't sit there sort of going, oh, social media is terrible. Let's sort of blame it or whatever. It's how we're using it, like you've just described.
Exactly.
And if we know we're using it with good intention, and I'm not saying that I always do. Sometimes I will sit there. Remember when my kids were really small and they'd wake up at like 4 and you'd go, oh no, I can't start my day at 4. This is awful.
Yeah,
and I would
yeah.
go, I'll buy myself some shoes and then everything's going to be okay.
Absolutely.
And you'd buy the shoes and then you'd end up scrolling. And you know, I certainly have used it over the years as distraction and all those sorts of things, numbing, comparison, certainly. Yeah. We've all done that, my God. Mm. But I think if you are using it, you can forge a beautiful connection, an amazing sense of community that I certainly feel this weekend with all of you brilliant people that have showed up today and have a similar intention and desire for how you want to feel after today. Mm. And it can be really brilliant. But I think, again, it goes back to discipline. Who am I following? Who am I secretly muting? come on. What am I posting? Is there any point to it? All those sorts of things I think are really valid because it is so huge. It's a huge, huge part of all of our lives.
Yeah.
So let's talk about theatre because this has been this amazing trajectory that you're on. And you're about to start a new show, or have you started your new show?
No, we've got our first preview on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So how are you feeling about that?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Terrifyingly good. It's a play called 222. It's a ghost story, and I've wanted to do a play for years. I've never done one because I was always quite shy of doing a play for some reason because it was like, you know, proper acting, you know, and it kind of and it scared me a little bit. But like it's been a beautiful experience, an amazing experience. And once again, this leads back a little bit to taking responsibility because a few years ago, about 5 years ago, I was kind of going for acting jobs, and not getting them, getting close sometimes, but not quite getting them. And blaming everybody else, kind of going, well, you know, the cast director thinks Busted suck, or, you know, or think that's some guy from Busted, what does he know? You know, when really they don't give a shit, they just want you to be good. You know, they want you to be right for the part. I was like, maybe I'm not getting it because I'm not good enough. You know, and that was a real hard thing for me to take, you know. And so I was like, right, okay, I need to study. I need to go back to drama school. And I went back to drama school for 2 years at 34. In a class full of 20-year-olds, and I was like, oh, no, but it was exactly what I needed to be, exactly where I needed to be, and I learned so much. My teacher was a horrifying man who was exactly who I needed to be in the room with. I hated him for 6 months, 8 months maybe, and I'd walk on stage and we'd start to work, and he'd sit there and he'd look at me and just go, which was Jazz Hands.
Oh.
It would cripple me, like, with fear. And he was right, you know. And sometimes he'd stop it and go, stop, sorry, are you entertained? So everyone, entertained? Are you enjoying this performance?
Because
all
cry.
I see is a performance.
I
know, and it was horrible to hear.
Oh.
But it was exactly what I needed
to
hear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, because I hated him for it, and I'd come off stage and I'd hate that man, but actually, what I was hating was the fact that he was right and I was doing those things. And I took everything I could from it and I kind of learnt loads. And since then, things have been going much better. So sometimes I think it's about, you know, I was blaming everyone else or every other scenario or blaming my band, which had given me everything, you know, for the reason I wasn't getting everything else. You know, when actually it was probably just the fact that I wasn't quite ready or wasn't quite good enough, you know. And now I treat every audition, every job, as a chance to go and play and have fun. I don't think about the job. I don't ever think I'm going to get it, you know, which is sometimes really hard because some of them I really want. But I'm like, I really want this, but I'm not going to get it. I'm going to go in there and do whatever I can to get something from this experience. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And sometimes I walk out and hate myself a little bit. But most of the time, I get something from it which I needed to get.
Yeah.
You know, and every job I get now, I do it because I want to get better. I want to learn. I don't want anything else from it, which is brilliant.
It is. Well, it's the best goal because it's never ending. You can never have learned it all.
You can never master acting.
No, but anything, I don't think.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any end point to anything. Mm. I think the end point, if you do get there, is boredom because you go, well, I've done that. I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to keep going, I could learn more, I could be better. I think that's the best goal ever, rather
than
when I get to the pinnacle of my thing, I'll feel amazing. No, you won't. There'll be another thing. There'll be another one above it.
That's been my experience.
Endless.
Every time.
Endless.
Once I get this job, I'll be enough.
Yeah, you know? And then you feel like,
and I'm like,
the same.
I got the job and I feel riddled with self-hatred.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? You know, so
it's a horrible lesson to learn.
I'm with you. It's a horrible lesson.
Look, I wish you all the luck with your play starting.
Thank you very much.
It's just brilliant what you're doing. I love everything you've said today has been massively helpful to me, and I'm sure everyone sat here and people listening to this when we put this podcast out. So thank you for being so honest and for sharing today and for being here. Please give it up
for
Matt Willis,
me.
Everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, God, Matt, that was just the best, getting to share the stage with you at the festival. I'm so, so grateful and so brilliant to get to see all of your faces in the audience completely wrapped up in Matt's stories and thoughts. It was a beautiful thing. If you were there, you'll already know this, but if you weren't at Tatton Park, the tent was full to the brim, people bursting out the side, sitting on deck chairs and beanbags on the grass outside, lapping up everything that Matt had to say. So Matt, thank you so much for your time and so much good luck with 222, A Ghost Story. I'm so excited to see you in that play. I've got to come along and watch. Another live episode coming your way tomorrow. So exciting, another one. Oh, and by the way, if you were at one of our Happy Place festivals and heard these gorgeous conversations in real life, do let us know who you loved over on our Instagram, at Happy Place Official. I've been loving seeing all your pictures and the reels that you've made of the festival. Honestly, it's made my heart burst. Massive thank you again to Matt, to the producer, Anushka Tate at Rethink Audio, and to you blimmin' gorgeous lot. I love you loads.